How important is it that Jesus is a chosen one? And who has chosen him? Has he been appointed to his work, or did he simply take it upon himself to redeem us? How does the Bible present him in this regard? If he's been appointed to something, what will be the lot of those who do not submit to him? What will happen to those who do not receive him in his appointed capacity? Those are some questions I'll address in this message. Jesus, the elect. My text is found in 1 Peter 2:6. Therefore it is contained in the Scripture, Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he that believeth on him shall not be confounded. Who is this that is referred to as being elect? Some versions read a choice or a chosen one. Who is this one who is said to have been elected or chosen? Who is it that is declared to be the choice, and who is the one who chose or elected him? Isaiah represents God speaking to this chosen one and emphasizes the fact that he is the elect. His words are found in Isaiah 42:1. Behold my servant whom I uphold, mine elect, in whom my soul delighteth. I put my spirit upon him, he shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles. Well, whoever this is God's exclusive servant who's carrying out his will. It's the one described as the one in whom God delights or takes pleasure. This is the one in whom he has placed his spirit, who is said to bring judgment or justice to the Gentiles or the nations. Who is this, and is anything more important said about him? Indeed, more is said. Isaiah continues, He shall not cry nor lift up his voice nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed shall he not break, and a smoking flax shall he not quench, till he bring forth judgment unto truth. Isaiah 42:2-3. Now this text assists us to precisely define God's elect, who it is, for the entire passage is quoted by Matthew concerning Jesus Christ. The account is given by Matthew, is preceded by the record of Jesus healing the man with a withered hand. That poor man was in the synagogue where Jesus was preaching. Jesus told him to stretch out his withered, shrunken, and lifeless hand. He did so, and it is written that it was restored whole as the other. Matthew 12:13. The whole incident agitated the Jewish religious leaders because it was done on the Sabbath day. They immediately held a council discussing how they might destroy Jesus, ridding themselves of his aggravating presence. The text then states, But when Jesus knew it, he withdrew himself from thence, and great multitudes followed them, and he healed them all, and charged them that they should not make him known. Matthew 12:15-16. And why did Jesus do this? What moved him to isolate himself from that place and tell his disciples not to tell the people where he was? This is where Matthew quotes our text, stating that Jesus took this action so that Isaiah's prophecy could be fulfilled. Here's what he wrote. That it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, Behold my servant, whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall show judgment to the Gentiles. He shall not strive nor cry, neither shall any man hear his voice in the street. A bruised reed shall he not break, and smoking flax shall he not quench, till he send forth judgment unto victory. Matthew 12:17-20. In Isaiah, God referred to the Messiah as mine elect. Matthew refers to the one whom I have chosen. Of course, that is what elect, when used as a noun, means, the chosen one. Jesus Christ is, then, God's chosen one, his elect. That is the point I want to develop in this message. I do understand that there are some circles in which the words elect, elected, and election are not popular. Well, that's a very mild way of stating the case. Such people think that these words have to do with a particular denominational stance or theological posture. Such people also do not care for words like predestinate, predestinated, or determined, even though they're all scriptural words. The champions of these nonsensical views would prefer to speak about the choices of men, not the choices of God. They feel more comfortable talking about the will of man rather than the will of God. They want us to speak about the freedom of human choice, not the right of God's choice. How foolish all of this prattling must sound among the heavenly host. They know very well, and every person on earth ought to know it as well, that it is God whose will drives everything. We're even taught very specifically on this matter, so that there ought not to be any doubt about it. In the Scriptures, believers are reported to say, The will of the Lord be done. Acts 21:14. When Paul made his plans, he accompanied the plans with the words, If the Lord will. 1 Corinthians 4:19. Christians are admonished to understand what the will of the Lord is. Ephesians 5:17. Even when planning for tomorrow, James admonishes us to say, If the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. James 4:15. And precisely, who is it that does not know this is true? Who is it that chose the means through which we are saved? Who is it that defined right and wrong? Who is it that determined who should save men and what they are to do to be saved? Who made the choice? Whose will is being done when you come to Christ? To whose will do you appeal when you want to be saved? Come now! Who is the one who really has a right to do anything and everything he wants? Who is it whose choice cannot be reversed? In the end, when you stand before the Lord, who will make the choice as to your eternal destiny? According to Hebrews 7:25, when Jesus intercedes for you, whose will is he doing? When according to Romans 8:26 and 27, the Holy Spirit intercedes for you with groanings that cannot be uttered, whose will is he fulfilling? When Jesus came to earth, whose will did he do? Well, there certainly is no need to conjecture or speculate here. Jesus himself said, "My meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work." John 4:34. Again he said, "For I came down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me." John 6:38. Men find it necessary to talk about the will of man and the free will of man, if you please. Whose will did Jesus talk about? You know the scriptures. Whose will did Moses and the prophets talk about? Tell me, whose will did the apostles talk about? Whose will are men told to seek? When Jesus taught us to pray, whose will did he say we're to consider? Is there anyone who does not know? Here's what he said we are to pray, doing it from the heart, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Matthew 6:10. So whose will are we to be heralding, the will of man or the will of God? Who really does have the freedom of choice, man or God? Who is the individual who would suggest that man have a right to do what they want but God does not? If you think that such a question is irrelevant, consider that all sin, every single sin, whether in thought or deed, is a result of preferring self-will over God's will. In fact, that's what makes sin, sin. Now, I understand that most people know this theoretically, but few people allow such a consideration to actually dominate their lives. However, I do not want to stray from my subject. Jesus is God's elect. The point that I have just established is that God has a right to make this choice, and no one has a right to disagree with it or live in contradiction of it. No one. If God has chosen Jesus, his only begotten Son, as his elect, no one has a right to choose Buddha or Allah or Muhammad. If Jesus is the elect or the chosen one, then no one has a right to turn to a psychiatrist for an answer or to scholarship or to a sectarian position. It cannot possibly be right to expect a religious routine or a theological position or some form of advanced education to bring men to what God has appointed Jesus to provide. It's wrong, totally wrong, for any person to be driven by self-interest if Jesus is really God's chosen one, his servant, and the one who has been sent forth to execute judgment. No person can justify letting anyone but Jesus define the problem and provide the solution. No one. He's God's elect. It's not right for any person to seek solace or direction on the couch of a psychiatrist when God has provided his elect, who is the one appointed to bring forth judgment to the Gentiles, providing both remedies and resolutions that are approved by God. Oh, do not think I'm doing nothing more than dabbling in human affairs here. Do not imagine for a moment that I'm encroaching on your right to seek a satisfactory resolution to your dilemma. It's those who are not going to Jesus that are encroaching upon God's choice. It's they who are attempting to contradict what God has determined. However, their attempts will have no effect upon God's choice at all. As God's elect, Jesus will make the final choice about the matter, and he will emphatically not side with the person who has sided against him. Jesus will not escort anyone into glory who's refused his direction in this world, all contradicting theology notwithstanding. Jesus is the elect. If you want to be saved, you're going to have to come to him. If you want God to receive you, you'll have to come to him through Jesus. If you want forgiveness, you'll have to come to Jesus, God's elect. If you want peace, you must come to him. If you want joy, you must come to him. If you want to know the truth, you must come to him. He's God's elect. If you want to be free, you must come to him. If you want to be able to understand the things of God, you must come to him. If you want your prayers to be answered, you must come to him. He's God's elect. If you want satisfaction, you must come to him and him alone. If you want rest, you must come to him. If you want confidence and assurance, you must come to him. He's God's elect. Do you desire a conscience that does not condemn you? You must come to Jesus. Do you want to be able to have a hope that holds up under all circumstances? You must come to him. Are you seeking acceptance and approbation? You must come to him. He's God's elect. You should be able to perceive that many professing Christians are going elsewhere for solutions, answers, comfort, and direction. Perhaps it's even fashionable in certain circles to do this, but it's still wrong. If God has elected Jesus as the one through whom he works, how is it possible for him to work through anyone else? God's power is not funneled to you through nature or principles, but through Jesus. He's God's elect. You cannot experience divine favor through a hypnotist or a counselor or through a routine. Jesus, and Jesus alone, is God's elect. If you want to free your mind, calm your heart, and find some respite from the troubles of life, you're simply not able to obtain it apart from Jesus. He's God's elect. He's the one who holds every benefit in His hand and is the sole dispenser of it. All of the treasures of wisdom and knowledge are hidden in Him, as affirmed in Colossians 2:3. If you want to know what God's doing, you'll have to go to Jesus. If you want to know what the Bible means, you'll have to go to Him. If you desire to know how you should react to certain circumstances, you must go to Him. He's God's elect. Are you confused about anything and you'd like to find some clarity about it? You'll have to go to Jesus. Are you facing tough choices and are finding difficulty determining what's proper? You must go to Jesus. Are you experiencing discontentment and do not know why? Then you'll have to go to Jesus. He's God's elect. But let me be even more specific in this matter. If Jesus is God's elect, and He surely is, then you'll have to trust Him. If God has put everything that He's doing in the hand of Jesus, what possible reason can you give for not putting everything you're doing into His hand? If God is pleased with Jesus, how can any person on earth justify not being pleased with Jesus? Now let me be quite clear about this. In order for a professing Christian to sin, they have to become displeased with Jesus. They have to come to the point where He no longer satisfies them. Oh, I know that people will object to such a thought, but their objections are only evidences of their own unbelief and failure to trust God's elected one. If you're ever tempted to think that God will approve of anyone who does not approve of His choice of Jesus as the fundamental person, throw that thought down and do it quickly, for it's been hurled at you from hell itself. If God says, "Jesus is my choice," and you live in a manner that does not allow you to make that same choice, do not be deceived about your condition. You are on the broad road that leads to destruction, and any thought to the contrary is nothing more than a delusion. Peter would call it a damnable heresy. 2 Peter 2:1. What I am saying is that you cannot have a view of Jesus that differs from God's view of Him and still be saved. If God focuses on Him, He'll not favor those who do not focus upon Him. See, all sin is the result of thinking only of self. There's no temptation, not a single one, that's not calculated to make a person think that there's an advantage to sin, that somehow the person will be better and more satisfied if they transgress the law of God. Oh, I know temptation is not presented in that way. Satan does not tempt a person by saying, "Go ahead, break the law of God anyway, even though it'll put you in danger of hell fire." Oh, no, he hurls another category of thoughts at his victim, thoughts like, "You can do it once and it'll be all right," or "It'll not be wrong to have some fun once in a while," or "You have a right to do what you want. After all, it's your life." In other words, he attempts to make you think you're the main person, and you must think of yourself first. However, this is not correct at all. You're not the main person. Jesus is the main person because He's God's elect. God has chosen to focus on Him. He has chosen to put everything in His hand. He's determined that Jesus will pronounce your eternal destiny. That's what makes it so important that you focus on Jesus, determined to do His will, and seek resources only from Him. Now, there's something to think about.